Chapter 15. Black Hare and Grey Hound. It was the crudest possible forgery. Bond leapt for the Bentley, blessing the impulse which had made him drive it over after dinner. With the choke full out, the engine answered at once to the starter, and the roar drowned the faltering words of the commissionaire, who jumped aside as the rear wheels whipped gravel at his piped trouser legs. As the car rocked to the left outside the gate, Bond ruefully longed for the front-wheel drive and low chassis of the Citroën. Then he went fast through the gears and settled himself for the pursuit, briefly savouring the echo of the huge exhaust as it came back at him from either side of the short main street through the town. Soon he was out on the coast road, a broad highway through the sand dunes, which he knew from his morning's drive had an excellent surface and was well cat's-eyed on the bends. He pushed the revs up and up, hurrying the car to 80, then to 90, his huge Marshall headlights boring a safe white tunnel nearly half a mile long between the walls of the night. He knew the Citroën must have come this way. He had heard the exhaust penetrate beyond the town, and a little dust still hung on the bends. He hoped soon to see the distant shaft of its headlights. The night was still and clear. Only out at sea there must be a light summer mist, for at intervals he could hear the foghorns lowing like iron cattle down the coast. As he drove, whipping the car faster and faster through the night, with the other half of his mind he cursed Vespa and M for having sent her on the job. This was just what he had been afraid of, these blithering women who thought they could do a man's work. Why the hell couldn't they stay at home and mind their pots and pans and stick to their frocks and gossip and leave men's work to the men? And now for this to happen to him, just when the job had come off so beautifully, for Vespa to fall for an old trick like that and get herself snatched and probably held to ransom like some bloody heroine in a strip cartoon. The silly bitch. Bond boiled at the thought of the fix he was in. Of course, the idea was a straight swap, the girl against his cheque for 40 million. Well, he wouldn't play, wouldn't think of playing. She was in the service and knew what she was up against. He wouldn't even ask M. This job was more important than her. It was just too bad. She was a fine girl, but he wasn't going to fall for this childish trick. No dice. He would try and catch the Citroën and shoot it out with them, and if she got shot in the process, that was too bad too. He would have done his stuff, tried to rescue her before they got her off to some hideout. But if he didn't catch up with them, he would get back to his hotel and go to sleep and say no more about it. The next morning he would ask Mathis what had happened to her, and show him the note. If Le Chiffre put the touch on Bond for the money in exchange for the girl, Bond would do nothing and tell no one. The girl would just have to take it. If the commissionaire came along with the story of what he had seen, Bond would bluff it out by saying he had had a drunken row with the girl. Bond's mind raged furiously on with the problem as he flung the great car down the coast road, automatically taking the curves and watching out for carts or cyclists on their way into Royal. On straight stretches, the Amherst Villiers supercharger dug spurs into the Bentley's 25 horses, and the engine sent a high-pitched scream of pain into the night. Then the revolutions mounted, until he was past 110 and onto the 120-mile-per-hour mark on the speedometer.